Yes, that was an authoritative gavel. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to our meeting today of the Transportation Finance Committee. I'm Representative Hornstein, the chair. And today we have an important meeting. We've been talking a lot about the federal role in our state and local transportation funding regimen. And so today we're actually going to get a very thorough briefing about that. We have members, we have a MnDOT panel, a Met Council panel, and there's also a organization out of Washington called Transportation for America that has been monitoring and analyzing and evaluating a lot of this information. And so we thought we'd also get a third party in addition to the public sector to give us some information. So unlike yesterday, I think if there are members that have questions immediately, we'll just take those as they come. I knew that yesterday we had some pretty extensive information from MnDOT and Met Council about the budget, but today I think we'll do it a little less formally. And so with that, we don't have a quorum yet. As soon as we do, we'll approve the minutes. But I'd like to call up now our panel from MnDOT. Many of you know Corinne Zewers, who did incredible work here as the fiscal analyst for the Capital Investment and Transportation Committee. We miss you, but we're glad that you're still around at MnDOT, and look very forward to your presentation. All of her brilliance that we were able to take advantage of in drafting bills here, and Representative Hausman knows well how helpful that was. But now MnDOT has that brilliance, and this is one of her areas of expertise. So welcome back to the committee. Welcome back to the House of Representatives, and we're so glad to see you, Ms. Zewers. And, of course, Mr. Peterson, welcome, and you can proceed with your presentation.
Not that he isn't also brilliant.
Well, I'll have some other comments about Mr. Peterson, but today it's welcome back, Ms. Zewers Day at the Transportation Finance Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Hausman, for your endorsement. I'm afraid there's...
Now I'm in trouble.
Right, there's not nearly as much evidence of my brilliance around to bear witness to mine, but nevertheless, we're here this morning. I'm Scott Peterson, with the Office of Government Affairs at MnDOT, and we're here to talk about MAP 21, and I'm going to present a basic overview of some of the main surface transportation provisions and changes in that MAP 21 brought us from the previous authorization bill, Safety Lou. For those who may not be as familiar with what an authorization bill is, it's really the key piece of federal legislation that provides surface transportation funding from the federal government to the individual states. After we go through some of the key changes, then Corinne will talk more in more detail about how those changes have impacted the way we prioritize and fund projects with federal funds in the state of Minnesota. So reauthorization periods have historically been for 6 years, but in the most recent history, the reauthorizations have been delayed, so the one bill would expire and the next one would not be passed for a year or two after the expiration of the previous one. This time, actually, we went almost, I think, 4 years before we have this new authorization bill from Congress. So MAP 21, the duration of the authorization bill is 27 months. It was passed in late June of 2012 and will expire on September 30th of 2014. One of the key provisions of MAP 21 is that it fills a projected funding deficit in the Federal Highway Trust Fund with a variety of relatively small sources of future revenue to pay for bills incurred for surface transportation projects. It also provides a substantial change in policy direction, and we'll talk about that in more detail. And it includes not only a focus on asset management, but using performance measures and targets to direct investment. And the asset management piece that does rise as a primary focus of the bill, and they talk in at FHWA about risk-based asset management. So basically it looks at what are the probability of future events associated with the condition of our infrastructure, and then the magnitude of the impact if some of those events were to occur. So states are expected to factor those things in into their investment planning.
Up to that point, Mr. Peterson, and you are amazing, so thank you. What would be, I think, especially important for the committee to know, to the point that you just mentioned, are there things that the state of Minnesota has to do under this legislation, either with this bill that we're writing for transportation finance this year or in future years, you know, in order to meet criteria and standards that are set out in MAP 21? I'm particularly interested in that question. Maybe there aren't things, but if there are things, we really, the committee would like to know. So, Representative Holberg.
Mr. Chair, and sort of to that point, as you go through, would you identify if any funds that are subject to sequestration that may disappear, if any, as you go through as well?
Mr. Peterson?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I will. To your point, the shape of MAP 21 and some of the features of the bill that I just mentioned are actually very consistent with the way MnDOT and the state of Minnesota have been operating in the over the last several years. The performance management and the asset management pieces of the bill are very consistent with the way we've tried to operate and change the way we direct our investments over the last several years and in our previous planning processes. So to that extent, I think we're in relatively good shape. Ms. Zewers will talk about how the changes in the bill will actually have some impact on how we prioritize our projects and how we distribute funding across the state. So there will be some impacts, but to my knowledge, I don't think there are any legislative changes that we need in order to accommodate this, other than I think there is a budget request that you heard about yesterday about more funding for MPOs and RDCs, Regional Development Commissions. So there'll be, some minor changes there. And then to your point, Representative Holberg, the additional revenue sources that I mentioned, so the non-gas tax revenue sources that have been identified to feed the Federal Highway Trust Fund, those funds, as I understand it, will be subject to sequestration. The last estimate I saw for the national impact of sequestration on highway funding was in the neighborhood of $630 million. I think Minnesota could expect to get about 1/50th of that. We're about average in the distributions to the state, so it'd be in that neighborhood, the potential impact for us. The impact on aeronautics and some of the other modes seems to be a little more disproportionate, a little heavier impact there, but we won't be covering those topics today.
Thank you.
Should I continue?
First, proceed.
Okay. As I mentioned, there's a performance-based investment direction in the MAP 21. So basically what that means is the FHWA will either establish performance measures for the condition of the infrastructure and set targets for the condition that they would like states to achieve with the investment of federal funds, or they will provide direction to the states on how to set performance measures and targets. There is a definite national highway system focus to the act, which means that the act really reinforces a point to the states that the federal government is concerned about the national highway system. So these roads that perform at a more regional transportation level, including interstates and principal arterials, which if you don't know what a principal arterial is, it's other roads that carry a lot of interregional traffic besides the interstate system. And so they really have directed a large portion of the funding to a program that is primarily focused on investments in maintaining the condition of those types of roads in a state of good repair. And then there's a lot of consolidation programs. So in the past, funding used to come to the states in a myriad number of different programs that changed basically from authorization to authorization. At one time, I know in the accounting system, we had well over 100 different program categories for funding as it relates to federal funds. And so the highway funds that will come to Minnesota through the life of MAP 21, we estimate to be about $575 million a year. A little more on the performance management provisions. Again, MAP 21 tries to make the connection between how we invest and the outcomes that the feds would like the states to achieve with federal funds. They will help us establish outcomes, and for example, an outcome would be one thing that's stated in the bill, which is the percentage of the bridges that are that are rated structurally deficient. So they've said that states should have less than 10% of their bridges rated as structurally deficient, and they measure the 10% by the surface area of the bridges. So not every, it's not percent of total number of bridges, but the percent of the square footage of the bridges. And the federal government will also set the performance target for interstates. They're in the process of establishing that, but we think that the target is likely to be that the state should maintain interstates so that less than 2% of interstate pavements are in poor condition. State have the authority to set their targets for the rest of the national highway system, so those other parts of the national highway system except the interstates. And right now we are looking at a performance target of roughly, we think, about 3%, not more than 3% in poor condition. And then the feds will evaluate our progress towards those goals over time, whether we're meeting them or if we're not able to meet them with our current annual investment. Are we making adequate progress? And then there are some conditions associated with that that I'll cover a little bit more later on. So one of the new programs in MAP 21 is called the National Highway Performance Program. It provides approximately $57 million in additional annual funding for this program over the safety loop programs that it replaces. Again, it's performance-driven investment, so it provides direction to states to invest in the condition of the national highway system, and that makes that national highway system condition a priority for investment in the act. If we do a good job of reaching the performance targets and making reasonable progress, it's possible for the state to have the ability to transfer up to 50% of the funding from this program into some of the other program funding categories. Another major program is the Surface Transportation Program. This is a continuation of a program that was in Safety Lou. This is one of the most flexible funding programs from Safety Lou, which means it can be used for minor roads that are federal aid eligible, as well as be used for transit capital acquisition. Unfortunately, in order to increase the funding in the National Highway Performance Program, they reduced the funding in this program by $12 million a year. There's also a continuation of the Highway Safety Improvement Program. There's a slight increase in funding there. They also rolled in the Highway Rail Grade Crossing Safety Program into the Highway Safety Improvement Program. So it's a combination of those two programs now. Again, there's a slight increase in funding. There is a continued emphasis on safety on all roads in the state, not just the national highway system. So safety has a little bit broader focus. There's also a continuation of the Congestion Mitigation and Air Quality Program and the Metropolitan Planning Program at approximately the same level of funding that existed in Safety Loop. Finally, there's the Transportation Alternatives Program, and you can see that that's a consolidation of a number of different programs from Safety Lou, enhancements, safe routes to school, recreational trails. A lot of the funding for non-motorized transportation projects will be funded out of this program category in the future. The funding for this program was reduced by $7 million in MAP 21, and there is one set aside that's continued from Safety Lou. That's the $2.2 million for recreational trails. A significant change in how the program funding will be administered, however, is that it will now be administered through a competitive grant program, and the feds allow 50% of the funds to be distributed by the state, another 50% distributed by the locals, but as Ms. Zewers will discuss, we're actually going to allow our local groups, the ATPs, the Area Transportation Partnerships, to allocate all the funds, 100% of those funds.
Thank you. We have a question from Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Chairman. And Mr. Peterson, just to make sure that I'm not making assumptions here, all these figures on funding, those are Minnesota figures and not national?
Mr. Chairman, Peterson. Representative Petersburg, yes. I'm sorry I didn't point that out. Yes, that's correct. These are all Minnesota numbers.
Okay. Thank you.
This slide just shows a table of the new MAP 21 programs and the former Safety Lou programs that were consolidated into each of these separate program categories, and also shows the fiscal year 2012 Safety Lou funding levels associated with those old programs and then the new funding levels under MAP 21. One of the other significant features of MAP 21 is the freight policy provisions in there. There's a direction from the Congress for the USDOT to develop a national freight strategic plan. So they're going to look at interstate freight networks and examine how well they're working, look at intermodal connectivity between states and within states. They're charged with assessing current conditions for freight movement, forecasting future freight volumes, identifying causes of freight congestion, and also establishing a state freight advisory committee to help the local and state road authorities identify ways to more efficiently move freight. They'll also designate a national freight network, so a network of primary freight corridors, including interstates and other components of the national highway system, but other rural road networks that also carry significant amounts of freight, in order to ensure that there's as efficient movement of freight as possible. And to help direct investments to improving freight movement, they are going to establish performance requirements for states for freight movement. We expect those to be truck travel time and reliability of truck travel time on interstate highways.
And Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Peterson, and it's good to see Ms. Zewers up there, Mr. Chairman. I remember when she sat next to us up here and made us look better than we deserve to. But Mr. Peterson, back to slide number 10 on the last page, the different pots of money that are coming to Minnesota. First of all, just for the committee's purposes, I just want to help clarify one thing. In Minnesota, our user fees are constitutionally dedicated to be spent on roads and bridges. So if we do anything off the highway, it comes from other sources. But on the federal level, the federal gas tax, is that all spent just on roads and bridges?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Beard, no. 20% of the Federal Highway Trust Fund revenues go to transit investments. Mm-hmm. Then, as I mentioned earlier, there are components of the highway programs, such as the surface transportation program, that can be used for purchase of transit capital. So those are, you know, in Minnesota, those would not be similarly eligible for expenditures from the Trunk Highway Fund, for example.
And, Mr. Chair, that money and then the other stuff, too, like for bike lanes and park and rides and scenic overlooks and so on, that also can come from that pot of money, can't it?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Beard, that's correct. Federal funds can be used for that purpose, yeah.
Mr. Chair, I won't put Mr. Peterson on the spot, but I know that in getting MAP 21 put together, the Congress had to move $19 billion from the general fund into this to complete it because there was things that are going on. at some point in the future, it'd be good to know, just for general principles, how much money is diverted from the gas tax to things other than the highway system, and whether that equals about the $19 billion that were moved over from the general fund. And then, Mr. Chairman, just one more thing. On this slide on page 5, number 10, there's these little pots of money that come up, and I'd like to ask, because not all that money goes through this committee. Mr. Chair, whenever I chaired this committee, that was one thing that gave me great consternation, was that pots of federal money showed up places that this committee had little oversight over or little control over. In fact, some of it was actually spent by non-governmental entities, so it didn't even go to the Met Council, for goodness sakes. It went to people who were just trying to do good and make the world a better place in their estimation. Is that what's happening with some of this money here? In fact, you know what, Mr. Chairman, let me just make that a comment. Let me not make it a question to Mr. Peterson, and let me just ask the Chair. At some point in the future, we may just want to have a discussion about the different routes federal money comes to the state and how it runs to places other than through this committee and through MnDOT. So just let me just make that a comment.
Yes. For transportation purposes, ostensibly, yes.
I mean, I think, thank you, Representative Beard, and obviously I think that one of our roles is to understand yes. where money goes, and yes. both state and federal, and I'm open to that. And thank you for raising it. I think I know what you're getting at. So proceed.
Okay. Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Just one comment to Representative Beard. The federal funds that we're talking, that we've talked about so far here, that is spent by MnDOT. So all the federal funds that come through this program to MnDOT are appropriated by the legislature. However, before, in the process of allocating federal funds, MnDOT only gets part of these federal funds to spend. Some are directed to local roads and local road improvements, as well as to transit capital and other types of things that by other agencies and sometimes local road authorities or local governments. The Indian Road Reservation Program basically was changed to the Tribal Transportation Program, as you can see here, and among the changes to this program were changes in the way that the distribution of funds were calculated. And unfortunately for Minnesota, that means a fairly substantial reduction in funding to Minnesota for reservation roads, something that I think we should pay a little bit of attention to as a state, and I know that's a critical source of funding for our Indian tribes on the reservations.
So just to be clear, Mr. Peterson, so you said that there's a reduction. Do you have a dollar figure about that and specific roads that you're worried about?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have a specific number. We can provide that to the committee. Okay. But this is a program. The funds don't come through MnDOT for this
okay.
program.
And thank you, Mr. Peterson. Is there then an expectation from the federal government that states or tribes make up for that loss? Was there some kind of expectation then, or are we on our own to have to deal with that?
Mr. Chairman, to my knowledge, there are no additional directions to the states. I think the states and the tribes are at liberty to make whatever decisions they think necessary about providing additional funds okay. or making additional investments in roads. Right.
Yes, Representative Houseman, Chair Houseman.
Chair, at least in this state, I think a lot of that negotiating is between the tribes and the counties, and there are, fairly formal contractual relationships that get negotiated on the county level about additional funding that the tribes might provide, as I understand it.
Thank you for that, and it sounds like it is something we should just monitor and be aware of. Okay, thank you, Mr. Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There are also some alternative finance provisions, some changes in MAP 21 from the previous authorization acts. One of them is an additional $1.7 billion in funding for funding assistance through the TIFIA program, which is a Transportation Infrastructure Finance and Innovation Act. TIFIA was a very popular program in Safety Lou and had considerably more demand for those funds than there were funds available. But it's particularly useful for large projects that are difficult for states to finance without some type of assistance. It's a loan program or a loan guarantee program that, again, for large projects, and it's been used quite extensively across the country to finance some fairly substantial projects. In addition, there are changes in the regulations that affect how states can use tolling on interstates in particular. Basically, now states are free to expand interstates and toll the additional capacity as long as there's no net reduction in free lanes on the interstate. And that's a change. There's a continuation of the federal value pricing pilot program, of which Minnesota has been a participant. One of the more difficult requirements is that there must be interoperability across all states for tolling, electronic tolling equipment by October of 2016.
Mr. Peterson, Chairman Earhart has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was wanted to ask about the Transportation Infrastructure Finance and Innovation Act. Have we used that, or does that count against our bonding debt here if we borrow from them, or how does that work? Have we used any of it yet?
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Peterson?
Representative Earhart, we have not used the TIFIA program. I think it was maybe 3 years ago, the legislature gave the department the authority to use financing from the TIFIA program, but we have not used that on any project.
Well, Mr. Chairman, is that go through the normal process of the trust fund and has to be paid back out of that, or do you have any details on that? Do we have some money that we could borrow from them and not suffer the consequences, or what?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Representative Earhart, under a kind of a standard loan arrangement, the debt service would be paid for out of the Trunk Highway Fund. Typically, TIFIA financing is used for projects that have an associated revenue stream, like tolling. Because of that, then if we were to toll a facility that was financed, obviously, with tolls, then the toll revenue would be used to repay the loan, and it would not count against our debt service here.
Thank you.
Representative Beard.
Mr. Chair, thanks. One of the things that fascinates me is the interoperability of electronic tolls. Friends that drive east a lot use Easy Pass in Indiana, Ohio, and Illinois. Does this mean that our MinPass system has to be compatible with that by this date?
Good question.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Beard, that's my understanding.
Oh, good. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for that.
To continue on, then, there are also some provisions in there that would accelerate project delivery. There's some streamlining of the environmental process. Basically, the states now can take programmatic approaches to address common or recurring environmental concerns for highway projects. An example of a programmatic approach that we've used here in the state is we have a number of historic bridges. So we have reached an agreement with the Historic Preservation Society of Minnesota to reach an understanding of how we will treat improvements or rehabilitation work on a set of historic bridges. And so it relieves us from having to go back every time we undertake some work on these bridges to go through the whole process of getting approval from them.
And thank you, Mr. Peterson. I don't expect that you're necessarily, and I wouldn't expect you to be, expert on Representative Fabian's bill or Governor Dayton's executive order, but do you just if you don't know the answer, it would be helpful to get it. But do you know how this relates to some of the state initiatives on the streamlining? Because we did a lot of work last year on it. I wasn't necessarily happy with it, but it is what it is. And so, how does this relate to some of the PCA and executive branch initiatives on this topic? Do we do a federal deal or a state deal, or how does it work?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not familiar with a lot of the work that has gone on with the PCA, the streamlining and stuff. I know there's one thing that the legislature asked us to participate in last year, which we have been involved in, and that is like a one point of contact for some water permitting. And that process, there was a committee established that reviewed how those things occur, and they came back with like a single point of contact for road authorities to use to get the necessary permits to complete a project. And so that would be a different method for doing streamlining than what I think the federal government envisions in this instance.
That's something to be, I know, this, I think that wasn't really meant for transportation projects necessarily, but if it is, it'd be good to know. I think, you know, there's a certain timeline around when permits can be issued and reviewed and that kind of thing. Representative Bernardi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if this is necessarily a question. I just have an interest in something that's up on that board, and I'd like to learn more about it. And I don't know if we can have opportunity to do that, but it talks about the National Environmental Policy Act and how it relates to road projects, and as well as environmental justice communities and how MnDOT approaches those, and as well as the Civil Rights Act and how it integrates that into its programs. So I don't know if that's a question I asked to bring that information back to me, or if we talk about
well,
another time.
Thank you, Vice Chair Bernardi. I think, well, that's the third bullet point to your NEPA, so he's going to get to that.
Okay, he's going to get to that, okay.
On the other question, it's a good one, and if there's any issues in MAP 21 that relate to that, that's the topic for today. You know, please feel free to talk about it, but we will have some more discussion about the whole range of issues that you're raising. Human rights, we had the Commissioner of Human Rights approach me, and so we might be getting into that a little later in a separate hearing. So you can proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm not aware of, Representative Bernardi, I'm not aware of any provisions that affect the department's responsibility to assess disproportionate impacts to communities as a result of highway improvement projects. So that's been a requirement as part of the environmental process for the department to look at that issue for quite some time. I don't know exactly when it started, but it might have been around as long as I have. So continuing on then, the agency coordination, basically that there's an accelerated decision-making process, and my understanding is that it involves setting time frames for individual steps or individual series of steps in the approval process for certain types of permits or approvals. And if they are not achieved within a certain period of time, then the question is bumped up the organizational chain for some kind of accelerated consideration. And if the decision is not resolved within a certain period of time, my understanding is that then there are financial penalties assessed against the federal agencies that are responsible for those particular issues. So it's an example of another attempt to shorten the amount of time it takes to get a project approved and ready for construction. And Mr. Chairman, back to an earlier question, and I am aware of occasions where we have tried to adopt a similar strategy here in Minnesota. I think it predates Governor Dayton's efforts, but where we've tried to establish time limits for certain steps and processes, and if they're not achieved, then it moves to a different decision-making chain.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. I just want to do a quick time check because we'd like to maybe get your presentation done in the next 10 minutes, and we still have the Met Council and Transportation for America. So,
yes, Mr. Chairman, I'll move quickly. One of the good parts of the MAP 21, I believe, is that now we have the authority to acquire right-of-way for a project before the NEPA process is completed, so we don't have to have a final decision on an EIS before we go ahead and acquire that, start acquiring property for a project. So just briefly on some transit provisions in MAP 21, as I mentioned earlier, there's a funding split between highways and transit, 80-20, that's a carryover from Safety Lou. There's a consolidation of a number of programs and modifications as well to some programs. There are new asset management requirements. So just as in highways, they're looking for a state of good repair for assets bought with federal funds. They're looking for that on transit assets as well. And again, there are also performance-based planning requirements to make sure that federal funds are spent in a manner that's consistent with national goals. Some of the examples for Greater Minnesota Transit, I'm not going to get into the more urban-related transit provisions since the council will be coming up to talk about those. But there was a job access reverse commute program that's now been eliminated and folded into a couple different programs. There's an enhanced mobility of seniors and individuals with disabilities that directs funding to both states and local governments in large urbanized areas. And federal formula funds for transit have actually increased, but because of changes in the funding levels for other programs like the service transportation program, we expect that there will actually be less funds or fewer funds spent on transit capital as a result of the changes in that. Quickly, as a result of the changes, in, particularly as it affects how we fund highway improvement projects, it has required us to go back and re-examine how we do that. And even though there's the same amount of highway funded, it's now allocated differently across these programs, and because of the performance-based investment direction and the emphasis on the national highway system, we've had to evaluate the projects that are in our existing state highway improvement plan and figure out how we can meet those commitments, and as well as transition to the requirements for MAP 21, and that is an area that Ms. Zewers has been very intimately involved in, so I'm going to hand this rest of the conversation off to her, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Welcome back. Thank you very much, Mr. Peterson. Welcome back to the committee, Ms. Zewers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I'm Corinne Zewers with MnDOT's Office of Capital Programs and Performance Measures. As Mr. Peterson said, we've been working over the last 6 months or so to transition the State Transportation Improvement Program, also known as the STIP, into the MAP 21 requirements. The STIP, which is, it looks like this, it's a very thick document. It's a four-year capital investment plan, and we publish it every late fall, early winter every year. The plan includes both state and local projects. All federally funded projects, capital projects, are in the plan, as well as projects that are of regional significance that are only funded with state trunk highway dollars.
And just members, as you can tell from Ms. Zewer's description, this is an absolutely central and critical process and document. And so we're actually going to spend part of a hearing. I assume the 2013 STIP is completed, or you said late fall, early winter. So,
Mr. Chair and members, the 2013 to 2016 STIP was approved in late November.
Right. So it is available to us, and we're going to spend part of a meeting later this month just going over that, because that is a central document and somewhat controversial too, because people feel, well, why isn't this project included and why isn't it that project, and we're going to go over the criteria. So just if you have interest in the STIP, I just wanted to let the committee know we're going to really dig pretty deep into that. So proceed.
Thank you. As Mr. Chair said, the STIP is definitely central to our programming process. The document is a fiscally constrained document, so we pay attention to both state and federal funds in terms of including projects in the plan. And one of the other aspects of the plan is that the area transportation partnerships are involved with project selection. The area transportation partnerships are sub-state multi-county partnerships. We have 8 transportation partnerships across the state, and in the metro area, the Transportation Advisory Board, which is associated with the Met Council, is the essentially the area transportation partnership in the metro area. The area transportation partnerships include traditional and non-traditional transportation partners. They include local elected officials, members from metropolitan planning organizations, regional development councils, as well as the public, transit agencies, and some additional partners as well. The role of the Area Transportation Partnerships is to solicit, review, and recommend funding for projects within their region. So projects that have federal funds on them, those are the projects that the ATPs work with. Now actually getting into our analysis of the 13 to 16 State Transportation Improvement Program and some of the funding distribution challenges that we're seeing in relation to MAP 21. The programs that are above the line we would consider to be under-programmed in funding, and those beneath the line would be over-programmed in funding. So with the National Highway Performance Program, which is the NHPP program, this is the program that funds interstate and then our major trunk highway projects. As you can see, we are significantly under-programmed in those projects under MAP 21. With the Surface Transportation Program, STP, that's the program that funds some of the minor trunk highways, as well as local roads and transit capital projects, as well as some other types of projects. And we're over-programmed in that area. And as you can see in the other programs, there's slight under-programming in the Highway Safety Improvement Program, and then with the Congestion Mitigation and Air Quality Program, as well as the Transportation Alternatives Program, we're at least somewhere in the ballpark with those programs. In terms of how we're going to be managing this under-programming and over-programming over the life of the STIP. For fiscal year 2013, because of when MAP 21 passed, we really had to commit to the projects in the STIP. We were right at the beginning of the fiscal year, and most of those projects were well underway, and so we said we'll commit to those projects. For years 14 to 16, we've really had three goals in terms of managing the projects as well as working within MAP 21. The first of those goals is to invest in projects in order to meet some of the MAP 21 performance goals, the performance goals that Mr. Peterson talked about related to national highway system bridges, as well as interstates, and then other goals on the national highway system. The second aspect and the second goal for 14 to 16 is related to funding for the Transportation Alternatives Program. Back on the previous slide where I had the under-programming and over-programming, in total, this program is over-programmed somewhat in the STIP. The issue with this program, though, is that we have old safety loop programs like the Safe Routes to Schools program and Scenic Byways that only have funding in the current STIP for a couple of years. So the Scenic Byways projects are only funded through fiscal year 2013, and the Safe Routes to Schools projects are only funded through 2014. So if we didn't provide additional funding for some of these projects, there would be a gap in terms of when the program could provide funding for projects. So that was another goal. And then the last goal was to maintain projects in the current STIP. And with all of this, I think one of the things that we're I would say very proud of is that we can meet all of these goals. In terms of maintaining the projects in the current STIP, we have about $20 million in projects that we're working with that may have to be delayed. But when we're looking at our total program, that's something that we can manage just based on we have a number of financing mechanisms that we can work with in order to manage those projects.
And excuse me, Representative Hausman had a question a while ago. I'm sorry about that. I didn't check the list recently, so I know.
It was this four-year capital investment. Somewhere I was looking whether we have a discussion about are you up against a limit of trunk highway bonding? Maybe that will be somewhere else, and maybe you covered it the other day. I missed your presentation.
Zeros.
Mr. Chair,
when it says four-year capital investment program, does that include trunk highway bonding?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hausman, the STIP does include regionally significant trunk highway projects with trunk highway bonds on them. Most of the projects, in fact, I believe all of the projects with trunk highway bonds would be included in the STIP because they're all of regional significance.
And we've got a debt capacity there that we have reached.
Ms. Zewers.
Mr. Chair and Representative Houseman, when we're looking at our debt capacity, we're right up near that limit. I don't know that we've actually reached it, but we're in the range of coming close.
Thank you.
Moving on to the Federal Highway Administration formula for highways and the split between MnDOT projects and local projects. The purpose of this slide is to show what our traditional split has been between MnDOT and local on for FHWA funding. As you can see, MnDOT's projects over the course of the STIP have been in the range of $370 million up to about $423 million, and the local projects are between $150 and $189 million. This is what I would consider to be our traditional split in projects. And the reason why I wanted to show this is because when we're looking at fiscal year 17 and actually meeting the MAP 21 requirements, we will have a revised method for distributing funds. And so this is a definite change from what we've seen in the past. We are moving towards some additional statewide programming in order to meet those performance goals. Since we're measured on a statewide basis, we've pulled some of the funding in for central or for statewide programming. So we have $400 million set aside for that in fiscal year 2017. We also have $320 million in what we consider to be district flexible funding. This is for our districts and obviously working with their area transportation partnerships for managing the highest priorities within their districts, such as pavement on some of the minor trunk highways and bridges. And then the last piece of funding is the amount that will now be directed by the area transportation partnerships, and that's $134 million. Based on what you saw in the last slide, this is a decrease from what they were seeing in the past. And I think one of the other important points for this slide is that this represents our entire program. So this is not only federal funds, but also state trunk highway dollars. And then just to summarize the impacts on our program and project funding, as I said, in years 14 to 16, we will be transitioning into MAP 21 and the new requirements related to that. We are working to align fiscal year 2017 with the Minnesota GO Vision, as well as our 20-year state highway investment plan. That plan will be coming out in August for you to review. As Mr. Peterson said, we've definitely had an increased emphasis on performance measures, and therefore we've had an increased emphasis on aligning our projects and funding with those performance measures. And then, as I said, also that increased emphasis on centralized decision making. But in turn, that also has led to, although a continued reliance and involvement with the area transportation partnerships, they will be seeing a reduced level of funding. And so, in turn, you'll see a slight reduction, at least, in their involvement.
So thank you very much. And before we transition to the Met Council presentation, I wanted to ask Representative Hamilton, you had a question, so you can proceed with that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And on slide 23 there, you talked about the central district, our transportation district, C, what I referred to, the $400 million. Then you had $320 million for the FLEX program. How is that determined or distributed between the different transportation districts?
Ms. Zewers.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hamilton, In terms of the statewide performance program and the $400 million, that will be based specifically on, a majority of it will be based specifically on performance measures, so meeting the 2% pavement requirements on the interstate system, meeting that 10% structurally deficient bridge condition on the national highway system, and then meeting our target of 3% on the national highway system. In terms of MnDOT's the flexible funds, those will be distributed based on a formula. It will be based on 60% will be based on, well, let me start with the 40% because I remember that off the top of my head. The 40% will be based on well, it's a combination of system size, so lane miles, vehicle miles traveled, and heavy commercial vehicle movement, as well as, and then the other portion of the formula is non-principal arterial condition. So that would be both bridge condition as well as pavement condition. The 40% is the non-principal arterial condition, with 20% being the condition on bridges and 20% on pavement.
Thank you. And thank you very much for your presentation today. And again, members, as always, I think our staff from MnDOT are available and accessible to us. If you have additional questions, please direct them. If I'm not mistaken, Mr. Peterson, this is about 20% of our road and bridge funding for the state coming from the federal government. Is that my number accurate there? I think I heard that somewhere down the line, so I just, you know, always want to.
Mr. Chairman, I don't actually know what percentage it is. I hesitate to say.
Okay. All right. Well. Okay, well, we have significant funding, members, from the federal government. And so that's why it's important to get a sense of these programs and our role in them. So I know that for transit, 50% of our transit ways are funded by the federal government, so we can make that transition. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome to the committee, and members, I think, well, if we can do this in about 15 minutes or so, and then I want to leave the remainder of our time for our friends from Washington, D.C. who are here. So welcome to the committee. It's great to see you. You know, Mr. Furman was working at the Met Council when I was there, and it's good to see you're still doing what you do and do a great job at it. So welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Chairman, for the invitation to come before the committee to give the transit component for the Twin Cities of MAP 21. For the record, I am Mark Furman. I'm the Deputy General Manager for Metro Transit, and my focus is Program Director for the New Starts Rail Projects. The overall MAP 21 component of the program that was authorized last fall really takes some different views and different ways to manage the fixed guideway or the New Starts program, and I'll highlight those for you today. They also have a focus in the formula funding for safety and state of good repair. I'll touch on that. And overall, the authorization for the transit program really is consistent with past appropriation levels prior to MAP 21. And that authorization level for this federal is $10.6 billion. Of that, flowing to the Twin Cities Metro Transit, $70 million worth of formula funding comes to the Twin Cities. And due to Central Corridor, our full funding grant agreement, we have not quite $100 million per year in 13 and 14 under MAP 21 coming to Met Council. The New Starts program, as defined in statute, is those fixed guideway projects that are of greater cost than $250 million and greater federal funding participation of $75 million. Small starts are less than $250 million total cost and less than $75 million federal participation. Why is this important? because we in the Twin Cities and really state of Minnesota being a beneficiary of these federal investments of over $1 billion to date for those three New Starts projects that we have implemented, Hiawatha, North Star, and Revenue Service, and Central Corridor, 87% construction complete, opening next year. As you previously referenced, Mr. Chair, the funding model for these New Starts projects is one half of the capital funding comes from the feds, from this New Starts program via the Federal Transit Administration. The local 50% is broken into three pieces, 30% from County's Transit Improvement Board, currently funded with their quarter cent sales tax in five counties in the metro, 10% from the regional rail authorities, that's the RRA, so the host county is a 10% financial partner, and then historically the final 10% comes from you all, from the legislature, in the form of state general obligation bonding. That's been the model for Central, and that's the current working model for Southwest LRT. Over time, I thought it'd be beneficial to look at the trend line for the New Starts funding for these projects at a federal level. It's grown over the last decade, a two-year spike due to the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act in 2009 and 2010. And then what MAP 21 did is essentially extend the 2012 appropriation level of $1.9 billion and authorize that for the 2 years of MAP 21 in 13 and 14, obviously subject to appropriation, which the Congress has yet to do. Part of the Met Council Fixed Guideway Transitway program includes bus rapid transit. It's not only rail, and we have some guidance from MAP 21 as to the definition for bus rapid transit. For New Starts projects, those are for bus operating in a separated and dedicated right-of-way that really emulates rail service. For small start projects, smaller scope, smaller dollars, it simply has to be bus operations in a dedicated right-of-way. It does not need to be separated. So it could be mixed traffic, like on a HOV lane. Some of the features of the New Starts program include streamlining to get into the pipeline. What is allowed for here now is Met Council may make an application to enter the project development process. Not yet fully defined by FTA what constitutes that application, if it's a three-page letter or if it's more involved, like it has been in the past, thousands of pages of documentation. But once we submit that letter, FTA by law has 45 days to respond, whether we are in the program or if they need more information. That compares with our Southwest application of a couple years ago when it took FTA 1 year to respond that we were approved to enter the process.
And thank you. And Representative Beard has a question.
Mr. Chair, it's not a question. It's a comment for the good of the committee. Mr. Furman skimmed over it an issue about appropriation and authorization. And in this committee, it's a little different because whenever we approve something, we assume the funding is going to go with. Washington's a different animal. They can authorize all kinds of stuff. But then a separate step is the appropriation. Sometimes that happens, sometimes it doesn't. But it was baffling to me as a freshman legislator here to try to figure out what's going on because they operate completely differently. Just an observation.
On many levels. Yes. We have to balance our budget, for example.
Yes.
Okay, proceed.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the environmental side, MnDOT mentioned this for the highway side. Same applies for the transit, where FTA has sought to streamline some of these environmental reviews. Best example here in the Twin Cities is last October when this bill became law. President Obama identified Southwest LRT as a priority project to coordinate that environmental review between Federal Transit, Federal Railroad, EPA, and so that now is in place and we're working closely with those federal agencies. There are six statutory criteria in Safety Lou, and they were extended into MAP 21. We won't take time to go into each of these in any detail, Chair and committee members, but I'll itemize them to say that FTA is in the process of issuing new rules and new guidelines, adjusting the definitions of many of these. Mobility improvements, that's the number of passenger trips that can be generated and benefited from these projects, as well as those persons who are transit dependent get double credit in this calculation. Environmental benefits, FTA is shifting its focus to reduction of greenhouse gases that are caused by these federal investments in these transitways. Congestion relief, we're still awaiting further FTA definition on how they choose to define that. Economic development, FTA is looking for alignment within a region and a project corridor. In the case of Southwest, we have 5 cities, and FTA wants to see focus on transit-oriented type development along those transit ways. Land use policies, a similar type of concept there. FTA wants to see the number of current and the number of future planned affordable housing units, and we get a higher rating for that. And cost effectiveness probably is the biggest change from past practice, where in the past you've actually heard from me talk about the transit or travel time saved was the real calculus. That is no more. This new metric now is the annualized capital cost plus the annual operating cost over number of riders. So much more direct and much more simple to understand. Manage the cost, maximize the ridership, and we will rate very well on this factor.
Representative Bernardi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question regarding the corridor. When you do your factor based on people that are transit dependent or in that area, how wide is that corridor?
Mr. Furman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bernardi, FTA looks at a half mile either side of the corridor and from the stations.
Okay, thank you.
I think we have just a couple more slides, 11 and 12.
Yep.
11 and 12.
Mr. Chair, we'll wrap up here, moving from the capital side to the formula side, from new starts to formula here. In the past, the council's received about $55 million, and that will continue to be consistent for the major formula program. What Metro Transit uses these dollars for is primarily to purchase new buses, keep our bus fleet fresh and in good state of good repair. We also use some of those dollars for preventive maintenance. So at the midterm of those buses, 6 years of their 12-year useful life, we'll give them new brakes, refresh the engine to keep them dependable and reliable in service. And in fact, state of good repair is a new focus for MAP 21. This is important to Metro Transit to keep our bus and rail system in good repair for the reliability purposes and safety purposes. We are not a huge beneficiary of these funds, about $11 million. The focus really here at a federal level is for those legacy properties such as New York, Philly, Boston, Chicago. And then lastly, Mr. Chair and members, there is the bus and bus facilities program that formerly was a discretionary grant program that Metro Transit was quite successful at with FTA. This now has shifted to a formula program, and we are expecting that based on that population pop density that we would generate about $4 to $5 million for that program in this year.
Thank you very much. Any additional questions? Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In that this 5339 program, how does that 4.3 relate to what you generally got?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, because formerly this was discretionary, it wasn't real predictable, but Metro Transit was successful, and so typically we would receive bus livability grants under this program of $5 to $10 million per year, so it is a little less, but more predictable.
All right, and Mr. Chair, if I might, can you share with the committee, kind of back to Representative Beard's comment, but what's kind of the prognosis as far as sequestration? Is any of this subject to sequestration, which looks more and more likely as each day goes by? Are you have you done a matrix or identified which programs are most at risk?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, I have been looking at that last week. On the formula side, it may mean a sequestration takedown of about 8% of these numbers that we had programmed. On the capital discretionary side for the new starts, Central Corridor is actively getting annual appropriations, and there it's a little bit more dramatic. We have $98 million in the full funding grant agreement, and the takedown there is currently looking to be about $82 million, so a 16-17% reduction for new starts.
And Mr.
Representative Holbert.
Chair, Mr. Furman, so I guess my impression was is that the federal funds for Central Corridor building project were all approved. So are you telling us that the money we were planning on for the building of it might not show up from the feds?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, let me expand my answer rather than just give you the 2013 snapshot. We have a full funding grant agreement contract with the feds, and so they have said they will provide $478 million to help fund Central, and that will happen. It's really a question of timing. So with that reduction in 2013, how FTA manages that is they push that out to then be made whole in the final year. For Central, we have yet a 2014 appropriation, and then 2015 is the final federal appropriation. So if the sequestration does hit and if there is that reduction of $16 million, that then will be a catch-up in 2015. Other projects then would receive less funding, but we would be made whole in the final year in 2015.
And if I might, are there also with sequestration reductions in the new starts pot of money that Southwest Corridor is trying to access?
Mr. Furman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, obviously Southwest has not yet received its full funding grant agreement. And so it's really a question of post-MAP 21, what the authorization and future appropriations will be. We currently forecast to receive our federal grant for Southwest in federal 2015, which is after this authorization. And we'll see what happens post-MAP 21.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Then our last question will be from Representative Hausman.
And just in a sense, following up on that, because of all the predictions that that dysfunction in Washington is going to continue, and in light of what the major chambers told us, that other cities are moving ahead two and three lines, and it obviously affects our economy at a certain point, what we heard from them is that other cities are saying Washington is too long and too expensive, and they're doing it themselves. And saving money. Where does our motivation work? Who's guiding that locally, or are we still putting all of our hopes on the federal government?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, our model going back to the Hiawatha days over a decade ago has been to seek, compete, and secure 50% of the cost of these big projects from the federal government.
So. Mr. Chair, I don't know for,
Chair Hausman.
For at some point,
yeah.
But we have to have a discussion about that.
Yes.
Because if other cities are doing it, why aren't we, and how is it going to happen?
Right. Yes, I agree. So thank you very much. You know, in keeping with the MAP 21, that was a very streamlined presentation. And come on, doobity boom. And I appreciate that very much. And thank you for the information and good questions, members. So as our last panelists are coming up, I wanted to. I know people have been wondering why we haven't done a lot of approval of minutes in this committee, and part of it is that when we had these joint meetings with the Transportation, I know you were wondering, Representative Holberg, when we were doing all these joint meetings with the Transportation Policy Committee, it wasn't appropriate for us to just move our own minutes. So I'm going to call on Representative Earhart to move the minutes in your packet from Wednesday the 23rd, Thursday the 24th, Wednesday the 30th, and Wednesday the 6th. Representative Earhart.
Mr. Chairman, after carefully scrutinizing the four different minutes, I find that they're in good order, and I would like to move their adoption.
Okay. Representative Earhart moves various minutes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. So there you go. Government at work. Our guest from Washington, D.C. sees it in action. Members, I thought, you know, we hear from agencies a lot, and I thought on an issue like this, it would be really helpful for us to hear from a nonpartisan, think tanky kind of organization in Washington. This is one of the biggest ones, Transportation for America. As you can see, they have realtors, they have the Chamber of Commerce, they have public health, they have engineers, they have the AARP, a very, very broad coalition of stakeholders, an organization that's done a lot of good work with all kinds of reports that I've been able to access. And when I found out that Mr. Donahue was here from Washington this week, I thought, well, this is a good confluence. We had planned this hearing weeks ago, but I just found out a few days ago that he was here. And so we wanted to spend our last 20 minutes or so hearing from another voice beside our agencies, maybe somewhat more critical, perhaps, of this program, or maybe be able to evaluate its strengths and weaknesses from a perspective we don't always get. So I think it's a really great opportunity, and so I wanted to welcome Transportation for America to the committee, and I don't know, we have about 15, 20 minutes, and some of this, I think, as I was looking through your PowerPoint, was the agencies had gone over. Mm-hmm. So I would use your time based on what you've heard today, however you feel is most appropriate, would be most helpful for the committee. So welcome. Please state your names for our record.
Thank you so much. Good morning. My name is Andrea Keepy, for the record. I'm the regional organizer for Transportation for America, and my states include Minnesota. So I am based here in Minnesota, though we are a D.C.-based group. Later, Mr. Donahue will be taking over. I'm just going to do a brief introduction, although it seems the chair has helped with that. We are a very diverse coalition-based nonprofit that is, of course, nonpartisan, that works on federal transportation reform. Of course, as the previous testifiers have covered, federal transportation funding and policy often drives what projects happen in your local areas. And so we've attempted, through our broad coalition with over 600 members, to represent the people who use the transportation network and need it to be safe, efficient, and provide economic development benefits for communities across the country. So we have business organizations like the Illinois Chamber. We have small local elected officials like from Boise, Idaho, Macon, Georgia, as well as the Transportation Management Association for the city of Philadelphia's greater metro area, representing over 5 million people. So we're very diverse, and this just shows a little bit of our membership. Our general vision is to make sure that we have a transportation network that works for everyone in this country and is complete, providing better, safer, cleaner options for everyone. As we've discussed a little bit today, there are a lot of problems plaguing our transportation network. I won't go into great detail on that. We focus on a performance-based approach where instead of project selection being based on who has the most pull in their district, that it would actually be based on what is going to give us the best bang for our taxpayer dollar, what's going to give us the best utility, what's a smart investment. We want to link transportation to land use because we believe that gives us better results. And we want to focus on maintaining the existing transportation network that we have spent decades and billions of dollars building in the best state of repair that we can, as well as making selective investments in bridging the gaps in providing a fuller transportation network that gives us more and better options. And that can often include biking and walking, pedestrian safety, rail, transit investments, to sort of fill out our network. So with that brief introduction, I will turn this over to Mr. Nick Donahue, who is the former Assistant Secretary for Transportation for the Commonwealth of Virginia. So he has managed the budget for all seven of the transportation departments for that commonwealth and was also one of their leaders on regulatory and legislative affairs.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, the committee, for your time this afternoon. Before I start discussing some of the policy changes and potential funding impacts of MAP 21, I do just want to ask your indulgence. I have to admit I am from Washington, D.C., and there may be particular aspects of your state and how you spend your money that I may not know or may pretend I know and then get wrong. So I just want to apologize ahead of time and just, again,
and just
ask for your patience.
Also, just once again, state your name.
My name is Nick Donahue. I'm the Policy Director of Transportation for America.
Okay, proceed. And again, we have about 15 minutes or so, and we'll probably have a couple questions as well. So
this slide here, just to kind of go quickly, outlines some of the key themes of MAP 21, but I think the two important things for the members of the committee to understand is this two-year bill took 3 years to pass. And the reason for that was not because people didn't think transportation was a worthwhile investment. There were two real things that happened in D.C. in addition to the just partisan gridlock that is there currently. The current program spends $50 billion a year, and the federal gas tax takes in $38 billion a year. The policy for this bill was written well over a year before it was passed. Nobody knew how to pay for it. And that was really kind of a very tough thing that happened in D.C. And I bring this up because this is going to happen again at the end of this two-year bill in 2014. As what Representative Beard mentioned earlier, there's about $19 billion in general funds in this bill, and that only gets us to October 1st, 2014. And after that, we're going to have to go through the same difficult, painful discussions that we went through on this bill to find the funding. The other thing that happened during the MAP 21 reauthorization that extended kind of the debate is, in the past, the committees of jurisdiction have typically developed the policy, and then other members typically went along with it because they got earmarks or they got set asides and they had something to go back home to talk about. When this Congress came in 2010, both the Senate and the House decided we're not doing that anymore. And so then all of a sudden the policy mattered to members off the committee in a way it had never mattered before, and that really kind of changed the debate on this bill. But it also means that in a lot of places there's one provision that tells you to go right, and then the next sentence says, well, you can go left if you want. And so I'm going to highlight some of those things kind of as we move forward here, because this bill takes some really good steps forward, also in our opinion takes some steps backwards, but luckily there's the flexibility in our opinion for you all to choose to take two steps forward and no backwards if you see fit. So this chart here, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it because I think the MnDOT panel did a great job of discussing this. But in the past, you had 20-plus programs under which you got money. Now you receive programs funding for these five programs. And I think the really important thing to understand here is that you now have $365 million, which is a significant increase from the past, of funds that can only be used on major roadways. It's called the National Highway System. These are your interstates and the routes you see with U.S. highway signs on it, and then a few other kind of major roadways. So that's a pretty significant change from the past. But what's really important is when we consolidated these programs, we didn't always send the money from the yellow buckets, which were the past programs, and the responsibility to the same place. So, for example, there, if you look at the top here, you'll see, you know, three programs went into this new National Highway Performance Program, which is your big largest program there. However, some of the money for bridge repair went there, but the responsibility for fixing certain bridges didn't go there. So if you think about what that means, this next slide really starts to highlight that for you. And so if you look here, the surface transportation program, which as the MnDOT panel correctly noted, is the most flexible pot of money. This is funds that can be used, you know, on collector roadways, local roads, any type of bridge repair, transit capital. This program received the responsibility for fixing a significant number of bridges that previously were fixed out of the bridge program, but the dollars to fix them did not go there. So there's, if you think about what that means, we're creating a strain somewhere. You all got around $600 million in federal funds in FY12. You're getting this exact same, and I mean to the penny, amount of funding this year. But what they've done in Congress is they've moved some of these buckets around and said, well, yeah, you have the same money, but you can't use it the exact same way unless, as a state, you take affirmative steps to decide you're going to do that.
So just to pause on that, that's a little bit of a different take on what MnDOT told us when I asked the question about are there things that we have to do affirmatively in order to access some of this money? So what you're saying is there are some things that we ought to be thinking about as a committee in terms of how we interpret, you know, how these monies are spent. Is that correct?
What MnDOT said was correct. There's nothing you have to do.
Okay.
However,
but there are things we can do.
As, you know, a former state official, the thing that I always did is when the federal government changed the law, I thought about it and decided, you know, am I going to exercise any flexibility if it was provided in that law to ways that I thought were appropriate for the Commonwealth of Virginia, and I think you all are certainly free to do the same thing here in Minnesota.
Interesting. Okay.
And so as I kind of noted on my last slide, there are certain pots of money that have really been constrained. The first one is, you know, that one that is the most flexible pot of money that can go to non-NHS road and bridge expansion as well as repair and transit. The other one was the walking and biking fund, known now as transportation alternatives. However, as I said, sometimes this bill tells you you must go right, but then, hey, you can go left if you want. You can also take 50% of any funds from one program and put them in another. So all of the things that I'm getting ready to tell you about on this next slide are the impacts that will happen if the state chooses not to go left after it was told to go right, so to speak. Next slide.
No problem with that in this state. Yeah.
Representative Earhart did that. Okay. Anyway, proceed.
So due to the changes that come in the bill, unless you all choose to act, the Metropolitan Council in FY12 controlled $53 million that they were directly able to select projects for. Under MAP 21, they will lose $11 million a year of funding that they get to direct. Again, this can be undone through actions at the state level, but if no action is taken, the kind of the Twin Cities TAB Met Council, and I'm going to screw that up a little bit, but that general organization there is going to have 20% less funding that it can control and direct within this region. In addition to that, as I've already highlighted, you all have about 10,000 bridges that are not located on the national highway system. These bridges previously were fixed out of the bridge program, but they were now put into a program where the bridge, without the funding to make up for that new responsibility. So you have about 1,000 of those bridges that are structurally deficient, which, you know, means in some point in the near future they're going to be in need of repair. They're very safe. I don't mean to imply anything to the contrary. But those are bridges that will need to be repaired sometime in the future, and unless funds are taken out of your large highway pot or state funds are used to offset these reductions, you're essentially going to have to choose between some local roadway types of expansion projects, transit projects, or other things that you would have funded in the past and fixing some of these bridges. One of the other major changes in MAP 21 is they've eliminated the requirement to spend any money on road and bridge repair. In the past, about 35 to 40% of the federal funds that you got were directed towards interstate maintenance and bridge repair, and under MAP 21, about 1% of the funds are directed towards that purpose. The final thing here, before I walk into a few more details, is that the funds for walking and biking through the program consolidation were actually cut about 31% compared to what they were in FY12. So I want to talk a little bit about road and bridge repair here, and you might be wondering, this slide shows you the cost to fix all of the structurally deficient bridges in America, and you see that from 2006 to the 2009, it went up $20 billion. So you might be wondering yourself, why did we eliminate the requirement to spend money on road and bridge repair when we have all of these needs growing at this rate, and they're going to continue to grow? Because remember, about 50 years ago, we started the biggest public works program in the world called the Interstate Highway System. And then we then followed that up with another large public works project where we built out all of our other kind of local and regional highways. And those were designed to last about 50 years. We started in 1960, just quick math, we're there. A lot of these bridges are reaching the end of their useful life and will need to be repaired and replaced in the next few years. But what MAP 21 does is it says you don't have to spend a single dollar on repair, but you talked about asset management, which was mentioned by the MnDOT panel, and that's really to provide states with increased flexibility where they're supposed to use a systematic approach to looking at their assets to figure out which bridges to repair, which roads to expand, and do it in a way kind of in a more business-like manner. And that's absolutely the right thing to do. and you guys in Minnesota are doing a very good job with your road and bridge repair. But I do want to highlight to the committee, one of the problems with asset management at the federal level is we've never actually used it. So we don't know, we know it's worked in some places, but it's never been applied across in the country, and so we don't know if it's going to work. And so at Transportation for America, we think the requirement to spend money on road and bridge repair was kind of prematurely removed before we figured out whether or not asset management was actually going to make things better. And I just want to give you a quick anecdote from my time in Virginia. When I was there, we all of a sudden were hit with a massive influx of road and bridge repairs. I mean, to the tune of $500 million a year, we had to cancel construction projects and put that into road and bridge maintenance. And that wasn't because, you know, oh my gosh, it just happened. What took place was two governors before us, that governor decided he wanted a legacy of several new construction projects. And he canceled a lot of road and bridge maintenance projects and moved forward with these big construction projects, and you don't see the impacts for several years. So if you skip a road and bridge maintenance contract, you're not going to notice in year one or year two or year three or even four that something happened. But in year eight, you're hit with a huge bill. And actually, the Association of State DOTs, their technical experts essentially have said that if you defer pavement maintenance today, each dollar you defer will likely cost you $6 to $14 down the road. So this is a very big issue. I do want to say I think MnDOT does a very good job today with its road and bridge repair. I just wanted to highlight this for the committee because I do think it's something that should be monitored moving forward to make sure that commitment remains there.
So we have just under 5 minutes, and I wanted to see if there were some concluding comments that you wanted to make in terms of where you wanted to leave our committee, knowing that we are needing to process MAP 21 and that we'll be writing a very large biennial transportation funding bill in the next couple of months. Any parting words or thoughts for the committee?
Well, Mr. Chairman, earlier the committee asked some questions about the TIFIA loan program, and I would strongly recommend that the state take a look at whether or not this is a viable option for expanding the transit here in the Twin Cities region. In the past, this was a loan program that gave out about $1 to $2 billion a year. This year alone, it's going to give out $10 to $15 billion in loans. It's going to give out the same amount of money next year. So if you look at the federal transportation bill, this is one of the few places where there's additional funding and opportunity for a state to essentially bring more money into their current construction project. The other thing that I'll say is they've changed this program now so that it can be used, so the loans can be repaid with regional sales taxes as well as property tax increases that caused through development concentrated around rail stations. So the Denver region actually has dedicated sales tax similar to what you all have. And they use that dedicated sales tax to secure a significant TIFIA loan of several hundred million dollars to speed up the construction of their regional rail network. The city of New Orleans and Kansas City are also looking at building a streetcar system in both of those places using increased property tax values from new development and higher property values along this streetcar line. And they are seeking to do that through the TIFIA program. And so I think you all have a pretty unique opportunity here, particularly with the governor's budget and the discussion, to look at whether or not this is something that can help you all implement that regional transit system faster than what might otherwise be possible.
Okay, thank you. We have one question, and then we'll wrap up. Representative Beard.
Hey, just a comment, Mr. Chair, taking off of Mr. Nichols, is it? Last, Mr. Donahue, yeah. His last comment here. About something CTS, Center for Transportation Studies, did a couple years ago was they did a study on value capture as a means of paying for some of these projects. And, Mr. Chairman, you know, you and I for 10 years have gone back and forth over who pays for this and why we're doing it and all that. But one of the things that we were interested in was this whole business of alternative means of financing some of these major projects. It sounds like he's describing a program here that might fit with that philosophy of capturing back some of the value increase and some of the things excuse me, that my transit advocate friends claim is you know, really important for us to do for the economy and growing value. If that's the case, we may have a funding source here that we could find some common ground on. So just an observation. Thank you, Mr. Okay. Chair.
Mr. Donahue, and then we'll have one last question and we'll adjourn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the things I also wanted to highlight is the way the TIFIA loan program works, unlike municipal bonding, is if you use regular bonding, you have to start paying that the first day you get the cash from the bank. With the TIFIA program, you do not pay a penny while you are constructing the asset, and then you are allowed to defer repayment for additional five-year period. And so, for example, in the city of Charlotte, where they built a light rail system, had they used a TIFIA loan, and they couldn't have paid their whole TIFIA loan back with it, but they could have done a mix with their sales tax and the property tax, they found that within 8 years of construction, the property tax values along that corridor have gone up $20 million. That can support a $150 to $300 million TIFIA loan. Now, they would have needed $500 to $600 million, you know, TIFIA loan, but I think it is something that can work really well when mixed with sales tax and other things to really allow you to bring in even more loans to maybe build several lines at once.
Okay, very briefly, okay. Representative Bernardi is going to. I don't know if you can stick around. I don't know if you have a plane to catch or anything, but members, I feel this was a very, very helpful presentation to get from T4 America, and I want to thank you for your very last minute appearance here, and I wish we had a little bit more time, but I know Representative Bernardi has a question of you. She'll just ask it to you after the committee, and if other members want to talk with either of our panelists, I would encourage you to stick around, and really again wanted to thank you. This was extremely helpful. Thank you to MnDOT as well. I don't know if the Met Council folks are here still, but I wanted to thank them. They really are efficient over at the Met Council with this streamlining. They come in, they come out. But anyway, we are adjourned until next week, members. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.